Woo! Welcome to the Some Work All Play podcast. We are so happy to be with you today.
Happy Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
And we're having a small miracle over here on this Tuesday.
A small miracle? It sounds like you're announcing a baby.
I know. Actually, that would be great. Not announcing a baby. Guess what's happening?
What?
We are in the same room at the same time, together, alone.
Yeah.
There is no one else in here but us.
Oh my God. It's been a while, Megan.
It's been a long time. Actually, yesterday I came back and you came into the house and we were like alone together for the first time without a dog, without a baby, without a nanny, without grandparents. And we just stood there for 30 seconds in silence and we're like, what's happening?
And then gave the biggest hug ever.
It was wonderful.
You had such a crazy week. We're going to talk about it really soon with your experience at the Lululemon Further event. You wanted to talk about it right away. I'm like, this is its own topic. We need to break it off, talk about it a little later.
I think you're also a little overwhelmed because I came back from the event like a further zombie. I am fully indoctrinated. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. I love it. I've been refreshing the tracker like probably every 35 seconds. I'm breaking the internet over here. And I feel like you don't quite understand.
I feel like you're half human, half influencer now. You're just like, you're on your phone so much refreshing that damn tracker. So for those that don't know, Lululemon Further is a 6-day ultra event that Lululemon invested millions of dollars in this past week. It's still going on right now. We'll talk about it a ton later. But you're in full zombie mode and you're coming out of it due to some caffeine. And so I'll agree with you. It's not just a small miracle. It's a big miracle.
It's a big miracle. It's a big miracle. What? That I'm not full zombie yet?
That you're not full zombie and that you're not staring at that damn tracker.
There were so many times I would wake up at midnight and I'd be like, where is Leah? And my sleep actually, on my Aura ring, it's like further break. It's like midnight, 2 a.m. So I need to have an intervention.
Yeah. We need to scrub that influencer out of here, one way or another.
No, I don't feel like it's influencer. It's like severe checker. I'm having like OCD with my with my tracker. I'm like, where are they? What's happening? Well, what's
Megan,
going on?
What is a coach other than an influencer of physiology? So this whole time we haven't actually been guiding people through their moral journey and physical journey and all of that as coaches are said to do. We've just been guiding them through their social media journeys. Just what can you post on Strava and Instagram influencing those sweet, sweet mitochondria?
That's where I was going to go. I was like, coaching is just influencing mitochondria. One step at a time.
Okay. And we have the best episode for you. A little bit delirious. Megan will be bringing a little zombie energy. I'll be bringing the energy of someone who just made best friends with a child permanently for a whole week. So talking isn't my strong suit, but I'm going to get better and better as this episode goes on.
You did great. Actually, we're having words of the week for Leo. We're trying to help him with his vocabulary. And so you're just going to say ball a lot on this episode.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, I'm bringing the red ball, the blue ball, the big ball, the small ball.
Yeah. Talk about small miracles. Balls. That is the theme of this podcast.
And definitely not the theme of Further. Further is as far as possible from balls.
It is gonads.
It is gonads, but it's the best gonads.
It's the best gonads. It's the ovaries. Okay. Great roadmap for you today. The episode is going to be baller. We have some exciting podcast news. Then an MRI follow-up before we get to Further. Then we're going to talk about Megan's experience on the ground at this really incredible event. Can't wait to hear about that. Then a new study on running economy and biomechanics that will give form tips. A question on vertical kilometer training. So how can you be a better climber, especially in steep stuff? Then news and fun things, including amateur drug testing, a wild story, new aero helmets, a study on DMT, so getting into psychedelics, that's really cool, UTMB start lists, a sports bra follow-up, and hot takes.
There is so much fun to be had ahead. Also, I love that we had to, so in order to, like, typically when we do science on this podcast, we text each other the science articles, but it was really hard to find this week because we just sent each other a million texts while I was gone. So we had to scroll through all of our text history and be like, where are the journal articles?
I'm responsible for most of your screen time because I texted you probably 1,000 times last week. I get really lonely, apparently. So I was blaming it on the tracker, but honestly, it's just my fault.
Your texts were hilarious. I was like, where is David? He's at mile 9.8. Meanwhile, Leah's at mile 357.
It is kind of wild to think. I was so happy that I was able to do a 10-mile run again. And they run 10 miles every hour, basically. It's crazy.
Actually, I had this wild moment where I was really hungry and really tired. And my hotel room was about a half mile away from the front desk and kind of the area where they have the food and dining set up.
So it's a massive hotel.
Massive hotel, yeah. So at 10 o'clock p.m., I was too tired to walk a half mile. As my athletes are out there in this quest to run 400 miles, that I ordered $38 room service.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, I am not going further. I am going nearer to this burger. I know.
The burger was worth it, though.
I actually couldn't charge it to Lululemon. I was like, I should be a little ashamed of this. I should probably pay for this myself.
So that's some expensive fueling. And my segue is to some inexpensive fueling, which is we are announcing a long-term podcast partnership now that's going to benefit you all so, so much. So the new presenting sponsor of the podcast, we are no longer the Some Work All Play podcast alone. We're the Some Work All Play podcast presented by The Feed.
Okay. I am so excited because I love The Feed.
It's so cool. And so when they reached out to us, we just said, hey, can you go into our account and see how much we've spent? We've spent thousands of dollars there before that. So we are actual users of this site. So please right now go to The Feed, thefeed.com/swap. It'll also be in our show notes. And there, all you have to do is click claim reward. You get an automatic $20 in cash and then $20 every few months for the next year. So you get $80 right off the bat, plus the cheapest prices on the market, not just for fueling products like we talk about every week, but also recovery products. It's going to be game changing for you if you haven't used it yet. Basically, it's like ethical, amazing Amazon for athletic stuff.
This morning was spending a lot of time on their website and I was calling it doing my podcast research. Uh-huh. I probably spent 45 minutes going through all the different products they offer, and you can order single servings of things. So like if you want to try gels, they have waffles, which are these like amazing boulder based waffles. So many products that I was on there and I was like scrolling through and I'm like, yep, this is podcast research. I just wanted to hang out on the website because they have really, really cool stuff on there.
And they're just such a cool company. They might bristle a little bit that I compared them to Amazon, but they're like that. But everything about them is like local. They're trying to drive the sport forward and they're giving incredible deals. So not only do you get $20 in cash when you use that website, but everything else is less expensive there than you'll find elsewhere. So before the podcast, I wanted to look at just science and sport gels. A pack of 30 on Amazon costs $60. On The Feed, it costs $49. Everything is like that. It's just cheaper for everything you need. So we're so excited about this partnership. And let's show them actually that that was a good investment because this is going to be a long-term thing. So thefeed.com/swap.
Okay. You have $20 to spend. What would you spend it on? Oh, isn't that fun to think about? Yeah. What would you do with it?
They actually have a lot of really good supplements there too.
Yeah.
But I probably wouldn't get a little sketchy.
You're going
that.
For your mitochondria, huh?
Yeah.
It's not as sketchy. All our supplements are actually, it's great because at one point in time, we had a question about finding citrulline that was safe for sport. And you actually asked the performance coaches on the app, the website, which is amazing.
Yeah. It's also really good to talk to their coaches about different things. So I'm really into it. I would probably at this point get Precision.
You know, are you serious?
Precision has a great deal there.
Yeah.
I would just get some big ass gels.
Oh, man. You got to treat yourself.
What would you get?
When you get $20, you got to go all in for yourself. I would get like...
You would get half of a cheeseburger? Is that what you would get from room service?
From room service? No, I would get... They have really cute socks on there.
Okay.
I love their water bottles, which you actually get one free if you buy $65 worth of stuff. So you got to like... I feel like with that extra money, you got to get something you wouldn't normally get.
You're going to go get cute socks, Megan?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to buy myself Precision anyways. If I've got bonus money, I'm going to make myself look cute.
What are on the socks? Do you even know?
Oh, they've got lots of socks. I know because I spent 15 minutes.
Okay. So go there, click claim reward. And you don't even have to spend anything to get that benefit. Show them that the podcast investment was a good idea. We can't wait to tell you more. What we're going to do with this is break down different types of things we use, break out a little bit just from like the one type of fueling into things like science and sport and other options that are out there, give you the full gamut of things that can help your performance. And now let's do a transition into what we teased last week is right after we recorded the podcast, I was going to get my knee MRI done. We were worried about like patellar issues.
You were worried about all things. I feel like at some point in time, you were like, is there cancer in there?
No.
Are we going to need to amputate? Like what's going on?
Somehow I had butt cancer, but in my knee. Is what you're saying. Yeah. There was a big indent though, right? That worried you.
Oh, there was a large indent. I do feel like though you have booped your knee a lot. I was like, and to be fair, like you don't look at your knees a lot in the mirror. So I feel like the indent, it was like, when has this been from?
Okay. So update. I am ready to rock. It came back with a number of different types of findings, but nothing that would be really long-term. And over the course of the week, it progressed a ton to the point that yesterday I was able to do a really light workout. So theoretically, I'd be ready to race in a couple of weeks. The MRI was really heartening. And I'm excited. It was what you said. It was like probably the best case scenario.
It's always so amazing. I feel like it's like when you open that email and you're like, what are the findings?
Yeah.
Your heart rate goes to 130 as you're like waiting for it to pop up and to see. And I'm so happy that you got it. And I feel like it is actually a great case. And sometimes like having confidence in the imaging is so helpful. And it's one of those situations where you had confidence, but you did have some interesting findings on there.
I did. The only other finding that I think outside of like tendinopathy that every knee will show.
Butt cancer. these sorts of things. Gonads. Maybe just like gonads in your knee.
I kind of do.
You do actually. I'm leading you.
Because covered on my ACL are ganglion cysts from an old partial ACL tear.
You legitimately have balls within your ACL. Yeah. A true man. So
I like to say that even though the MRI and getting it while it was good shows that I might not be all that tough, training through an old partial ACL tear shows that I am tough. So I'm going to embrace it. I think it happened in football my senior year of high school. And it was the playoff game and got rolled up under a pile and hurt my knee and thought I twisted it and never really did anything about it. Just took a couple weeks off. But I want to point out for the listeners, I scored a touchdown after that injury. Yeah. Yes, it was in garbage time. Yes, it didn't matter. Yes, we lost. But I'm pretty proud of myself for that.
I'm really proud of you. I wish I knew you in your football days. It would have been so much fun. But I actually want to reframe something that you said there. You said something about like, oh, I wasn't tough because the MRI came back and it like wasn't as bad as you expected. Yeah. I feel like true toughness actually is like getting in the MRI machine and being like, something's not feeling right. I'm going to figure it out. And so I push back against that.
You know what true toughness is?
What?
What you say to them when they ask you the playlist they should play when you're in the MRI machine.
What did you say?
Well, for those that don't know, an MRI machine makes a ton of noise when you're in there and it just like – just really tough noise. And so they put headphones on you and they said, we have Spotify. And so I was like, you know what? I want to play my elliptical music, what I've been doing while I'm injured. And so I said, can you play DMX radio? So they're like, sure. And gave me a little bit of a funny look.
I wonder if that's the first time anyone has ever said that.
I doubt it. I think DMX, you know, Colorado is his main audience. But as soon as I get in there and put these things on, the very first thing I hear is the start of X gonna give it to you, give it to you, his famous song, which is arf, arf, and the most badass barking you've ever heard. And I've been training Leo about the song, sound a dog makes. And I was like, okay, I need to go back to the drawing board because from now on with Leo, the sound a dog makes is gonna be DMX at the start of that song being like, arf, arf.
How did the rest of the existence go for you? Because like, arf, arf is great. And then I feel like it's a lot from there, especially for like a 20 minutes in an MRI machine.
Yeah. I realized that some of DMX's lyrics, a little bit farther than I'd like to be going within an MRI machine. I probably should have chosen something a little bit more meditative, maybe even some Taylor Swift or something, but it was a good vibe. And maybe that's what led to my knee healing so rapidly. It was like, it's motivated by the DMX music.
Taylor Swift would have been so good for the knee gonads. The ganglion cysts and the ACL would have been like, we are serenaded.
Yeah. Okay. So before we get to further, one more update from my life that's kind of interesting is while you were traveling, Let's Run, the website we've talked about and especially talked in a bad way about their message boards on here before, one of my quotes on Ali Ostrander's journey was their quote of the day from an article. And that was really interesting. And but the fascinating thing that I wanted to share is that my response to it wasn't like excitement or for Ali or whatever. It was anxiety that I got so anxious to be even included on that website, just thinking about what will the message boards even say about something that has the vibes of this podcast? So it's kind of just weird to think about how being in the public eye, even in these really small settings, can incite these types of emotions.
It's kind of fascinating how we coalesced on that too, because so you sent me a text message. I was out running and my headphones read it to me. And you said something like, go check the front page of Let's Run. I am on there. I'm out in the middle of the desert, like alone. Yeah. I hadn't seen anyone. And I was like, oh shit, this is not going to be good. And so I panicked and I was like, you need to send me a screenshot of that because I'm not going to check it like in the middle of my run. And so I totally get the anxiety. I actually didn't share this with you too, because then for the rest of the run until you sent the screenshot, I was like, oh shit.
Oh no.
What's happening? Yeah. And so I understand it's really hard to go through that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry I put you through that. but it was okay. I just think, I actually had a whole rant on the Patreon special episode last week. So, we always record these bonus episodes on Patreon and Megan wasn't able to do it because of further. So I did 46 minutes of question and answer. And at one point just did a digression into why I think those message boards are so bad, for the sport and how little moderation it would take to scrub it, from just some of the like nature of that message board tearing down athletes in the sport.
Well, it's curious. Actually, sometimes they do scrub it, but I feel like they scrub it for particular people. So like you'll be in there'll be like a message and there'll be like one post and then all of a sudden they will be like, this post has been deleted. This post has been deleted in terms of like the follow-up comments. But I feel like it's not as often for women as it is for men. Have you noticed that?
Maybe it's just that the women are smart enough not to look, so
yeah,
they don't message about it.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the quote is essentially described Ali Ostrander's training. So, Ali, one of the best athletes in the world, but we've had to take a cross-training heavy approach where she's usually running about 4 times per week. And within that context, we're doing lots of quality cross-training. We're keeping her speed really high with strides. And the quote was just saying that. And the reflection I had is just how much people like Ali and Parker Valby are changing training theory. Because mm-hmm. I think in the past, everyone was like, miles matter. And yeah, people can do low miles if they're insanely talented, but that's the only time. And with people like Parker Valby, who just won the 3K and the 5K at NCAA indoors.
And set her own, she took her own record in the 5K. She ran so fast.
Yeah. And during the middle of the 5K, one of her teammates was doing the long jump or something and they jumped well. And she just gives 2 big thumbs up. It's like, you're so not locked in. She's so good that she can just be watching the long jump during her race.
Well, she actually said in an interview that she was watching it up on the screen as well. So that's how she knew it was happening. And then when her teammate did that, she gave them the thumbs up.
It's like me listening to like a podcast while I run. She's watching the screen yeah. during NCAA championships. But I think that this training theory isn't just for these athletes that are freakishly talented. What they've done is given people the leeway to experiment in training. What we're starting mm-hmm. to see more and more is that athletes that do get a little bit interesting with mixing in cross training or even things like uphill treadmill can really, really excel. That it's so much less about mileage than we might have thought 20 years ago. So I'm very excited by like what the quote was about, which was essentially, you don't need to run a ton to be the best runner you can be and embrace cross training.
I love seeing athletes do that and prioritize health and consistency. And also not just athletes, like these are athletes at the Olympic level,
yeah.
like Ali Ostrander at the Olympic level, Parker Valby, they actually asked her. I mean, she said that she hadn't considered it yet. She's just going day by day. But yeah. I do think she's also an Olympic hopeful. She shows up to the trials, she's just so strong.
So true. So many exciting things out there in training theory. And now we're getting to the second most exciting thing on the episode, is the feed thing. Yeah. I was so pumped by the feed that we're going to start there. But further, this project that you just spent your whole last week at, Megan. So give listeners a summary of what this even is.
Okay. It is truly wild is the first place that I have to start. It is a totally different event. And I feel like I am coming back as Nami because I was just fully in it for 6 days. Like being out there on the course, functionally living there, like breakfast, yeah. lunch, dinner, late nights there. And to come out of it and back into reality is almost a strange existence. And I feel like I've almost never said that about anything in my life.
Yeah.
And so it is curious to like be back and be on the ground. Okay. But what it is. So it's a 2.5 mile loop that athletes are doing, relatively flat loop, though athletes are definitely feeling some of the turns yeah. and like small inclines at the moment. And they're looping around that for 6 days and 10 athletes on the starting line, lots of diverse backgrounds. Like some athletes just started running a year ago and they're yeah. showing up to the 6 day ultra. And then Camille Heron out there, there's something like 24 records on the line that she's going for in the process. And it's just so cool to see the mix of athletes coming together.
So my first question, and I think one that a lot of listeners have, I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Yes.
Since we were both involved from the very beginning of this project of, you know, scoping out some of the scientific parameters of it, you're one of the science advisors on it, in addition to being coaches, some of the athletes, is why aren't more people at the start line? Or why isn't an open start line? What is the theory there?
I think the theory is Lululemon is pouring like an unprecedented amount of resources into these athletes yeah. and into the event in general. I actually had a moment where I was standing there at the start line eating dragon fruit.
What?
I have never had dragon fruit in my entire life. I didn't even know what it was.
Yeah.
I had to ask someone. I was like, what is this?
How
what
was
is this
it?
That I'm eating? It was amazing.
You
I don't
like
say it?
It
was like the most life-changing thing I ever had, but
yeah.
it was good. Certainly a new experience.
Okay, so let's compare it to, you know, orange slices at halftime of a soccer game.
For sure, orange slices.
Orange slices beat dragon fruit.
Yeah. Orange slices beat dragon fruit. But I had this moment where I was like, okay, like ultra runners are so used to like peanut butter and jelly, like
yeah.
on random, like wide serving tables in the middle of a field. And now I'm here at an ultra eating dragon fruit, like talking to influencers. Like it just felt very different. But I think when you view it through the lens of like, this is like Lululemon's Breaking 2 type of project.
Yeah.
And they're investing so many resources into like female athletes and into research and into performance. It kind of changed my context of it.
I really loved that part of it. That essentially what their idea here is, you know, we say on the podcast all the time, everyone is an elite athlete and treat yourself that way.
Yes, yeah.
And because they confined it to 10 athletes, Lululemon was able to invest so much in each individual, not just in the event, in the marketing and things like that, but in let's get you to the start line as prepared as you can possibly be and support you through the ups and downs. Because one of your athletes, Stephanie Flippin, wasn't able to get there ready to like do her ultimate distance in 6 days, but they still supported her the same way.
And also she still showed up, which I imagine we talked about, like it takes so much courage to show up with your heart on your sleeve and support other athletes when you're not able to go the full distance of what you're capable of. And Lululemon did this for everyone. Like yeah. They were rolling out the red carpet of treatment across the board. And at first I was like a little bit uncomfortable, not uncomfortable with it, but it just was like, it was so unprecedented.
Yeah.
And then I took a step back and I was like, okay, I guess it makes sense because we're not used to seeing this, one, in female athletes, and two, in the trail and ultra running world. Like I feel like both of those cohorts of people are often like a second afterthought in terms of like how we prioritize resources within the running world.
Yeah.
And to see Lululemon like hit these two populations in tandem, I was like, this is what matters and this is so cool.
And I can see why Lululemon is this multi-billion dollar company now.
Yeah.
Because they're ahead of the game. Like what you talked about last week when we were talking about athlete contracts, where athletes are so vastly underpaid relative to the value they're giving companies. What I think Lululemon sees is that trail running and the running market in general can be grouped together in such a way that the athletes should be getting as much investment as you're seeing in sports like basketball. Like there's a future where more trail shoes are sold than basketball shoes. Mm-hmm. So why are trail runners not being paid $5, $10 million a year like the mid-level pro basketball players are? And the answer to that question is because they haven't been. And I think that—
Well, also it's TV deals too.
Of course.
Yes, I think Tronning needs to get on Netflix and then it needs like, you know, regular TV deals from there and then it will help. But yes.
All that is a proxy for is exposure. Mm-hmm. The shoe companies are not getting any of the deals with ESPN. That's the league. NBA is making those deals. And then that helps sell shoes and build capital. But there's no reason that like, you know, Camille Heron can't be Steph Curry. Not in like the specific way of, you know, basketball versus running, but in the sense of selling just as much gear. And so I think what Lululemon really sees is that this is a principle that we care about. Mm-hmm. And if we beat other companies in this way of getting that investment in, we're going to be like Nike signing Michael Jordan in 1984. So I love what Lululemon's doing here. I think it's incredibly risky because in spending this many millions of dollars, like I don't know where the return on investment comes. Like are they measuring
it? But do they need that because they're Lululemon? Like,
I mean, every company needs it because they're, you know, especially a public company like Lululemon answering to shareholders. So, I mean, I'm just curious to see how it unfolds for them. Like after the fact, are they going to say, obviously it's been a successful event so far in terms of our perspective, mm-hmm. but will it be in the C-suite where they do the spreadsheets on this stuff? I don't know the answer to that question.
I know. I'm curious about that. But I feel like if you look at the storytelling that is coming from this event, I think that's like one of the main things that I come away with is I think at first for me, so we were in the early iterations of this project, like talking to Lululemon internal team.
To get it approved.
Before they even took it to this C-suite. And so we were there for like all the early iterations of, okay, we're going to run this like a Biggs backyard race, or we're going to have this format or this format. And I think for me as a coach, when it shifted to the 6 day format, I was like, this is a freaking long time.
So long.
It is long. Like I think my philosophy as a coach is very much let's run faster and then let's get athletes to go further. And so I struggled with it at first, but honestly, like seeing the stories that are coming from it, I've actually become a lot more comfortable with it as a coach. And I'm like, oh, this is cool. I think there's something about having like Camille Heron standing on the starting line saying she's going to run 660 plus miles.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it creates this shift where athletes that have just been getting into ultra running now have the power to be like, oh, I'm going to run 200 miles or 250 miles. And it's like the Camille Heron polarizing shift effect of like inspiring athletes to be able to do that.
Yeah. Camille Heron's the tide and we're all boats.
And we're all following it. Yes.
Yeah. That's the thing that jumps out to me. And the big lesson for anyone out there is the inspiration from this type of event. We are all capable of so much more than we can possibly conceive.
That was my biggest takeaway. I coached Kayla Jeter, who ran, she has run 3 marathons and she is stepping up right now. I haven't checked my tracker in the last 35 minutes as I've been recording this podcast, but she's probably somewhere around 220 miles.
Wow.
En route to trying to get to 250. And that blows my mind as a coach. And I think that's why like I feel so passionate about this project. It's because it's opened my eyes as a coach in ways that like I never expected of just how capable athletes are. And like I think it's going to shift my reality in terms of like what I envision for athletes.
And there's another athlete on the start line who I read hadn't done a 5K before.
Rico, yes.
And is now over 100 miles.
A year ago, hadn't run at all. Yeah. Never done a 5K. And now it's over 100 miles.
And yeah. Think about what that does for all of our paradigms about what we do. You know, that's why I love ultras. Like, I don't think 6 days should become a thing. I think...
it's a long...
Yeah.
Being there, it is a long time. Like, yeah. A long, long time.
And this is... almost like a scientific experiment that improves something at the very, very margins of extremes. And then we can interpolate from there.
Yes.
But if these athletes can do this when they put their mind to it and have support, then if you are worried about going for your first ultra or 100 miles or going for your fast 5K, you absolutely should do it. Like, go for it, because I mean, God, look at what Kayla's doing. You know, I couldn't have never imagined running that far. And she's doing it having not run farther than a marathon before the event.
And she's doing it in such a way where she's like actually, I mean, she's had lows. It's been quite hard, yeah. But she's also been like truly joyful out there. And I think that is some of the magic of the 6 day event that I never anticipated, is that it gives athletes the space to get to explore this. Whereas like in an event like Biggs, like athletes that can't hit those cutoffs.
Yeah.
Can't wind up continuing. And this event gives athletes like the creative freedom to get to play out there.
Okay, so let's take a step back, talk about some of the science, maybe some of the things that you learned out there. So first, how about strategy on the course? Like, what was it like seeing these athletes go around? Like, what did you learn out there?
Well, I think the biggest thing at these like multi-day ultras is going in with a strategy. I called it like, we're playing chess with carbs. Okay. Like, let's get work on fueling. Let's really be like specific about intentions. Cause I think it helps athletes ground, especially standing on the starting line, being like, we have a plan.
Chess with carbs.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Perfect description of ultras. One of the reasons I've fallen in love with running ultras is there's so much more strategy involved.
Oh, so much. Yeah.
You make decisions constantly.
And the longer the race goes on, it's almost like the strategy becomes more significant too.
And the carbs become more significant too.
Yes, exactly. Well, actually, I am having athletes feel with slightly less carbs than I would for like a higher intensity race, just because their intensities aren't quite as high.
But they need to heal on the fly. I mean, it's almost like doing the Appalachian Trail more than doing a marathon. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to get more of those types of, you know, elements in there.
Well, it's like chess with carbs and fats and proteins, because it's like, as you go further and further, like those other macronutrients become really important.
And anti-chafe cream.
Yeah.
I saw a picture posted by Lululemon of you massaging somebody's leg, but all it is your hand. And I was like, I know that massage hand. I can pull that up out of the lineup. I know that one.
You know that one. Well, actually, at times it was Voltaren.
And oh, yeah.
I felt really good, which is a topical NSAID cream. There was one day that I felt amazing while I was there running. And I'm like, it's probably because I have 48 servings of Voltaren in my hands from the amount.
Your hands could never be hurt again.
They are so anti-inflamed.
You have like two claws right now from all the Voltaren that you rubbed on athletes, just absorbing through your fingers.
It's so wild. But truly, I mean, I feel like it's like playing chess out there, but then as the event goes on, just like dropping bombs on the chessboard, because it's like, you know, things implode, things happen to the body. Actually, perhaps that's a
battleship.
Bad, yes,
battleship.
I was like, that's a bad.
No, phrase. Battleship is all about bombs.
Yes, yes.
So it's perfect.
I was like, I don't know, we should promote warfare tactics on here. But like truly strategy implodes, and it's about an athlete's troubleshooting. So like Leah Yingling, one of the best troubleshooters out there, an engineer, she texted me this morning and was like, I have learned more from this event than I have in any race. And I think like the ability to have concrete strategy and then troubleshoot is what it's all about.
Okay, so let's get down into the science now.
Yeah.
One of the things that you talked a lot about was cooling and things like that. Was there any takeaway from there?
Yeah, athletes had to cool. I mean, it was hot. So Palm Springs, it was like 75, 80 degrees, which honestly felt like the surface of the sun at times. Like it felt real hot and I wasn't even doing anything. I was ordering room service for my hotel.
We didn't recommend Palm Springs in the scoping document, but it turns out like it worked out pretty well.
It's working. Yeah, it's going well. But tons of cooling. I would love to know their ice bill for this event, but it was cool. Lululemon made, so they made ice bandanas, they made dual compartment ice sleeves. And I think my big takeaway is like, at events with heat, ice early, ice often. And the athletes that were doing like performance cooling based strategies seemed to like be much like more fulfilled out there because it was more pleasant.
Yeah. Cooling revolution in endurance sports. Make sure after your warm up, before the starts of your races, you are cool.
Yeah. Pre-cool. Yes. Yeah.
Pre-cool. And then out there, stay wet or use ice, but keep that going basically no matter what distance you're doing, even when it's like 60 degrees. That's plenty warm to start the cooling process.
We also had ice tanks there too for like post. So before athletes were going to sleep, like tossing them in the ice tank and having that recovery element of it too. So it was kind of wild to see the amount of ice that was being expended out there. But as part of the science, they also had athletes swallow core temperature pills.
Oh.
So they were monitoring the core temperature of athletes as they were out there competing. And anecdotally, I was seeing some of them, like it was correlated with the amount of cooling that athletes were doing.
Interesting.
Yes.
Whenever I hear about a core temperature pill, I imagine Magic School Bus.
Yeah, like, when you're like taking a
Miss Frazzles or whatever is just going down and looking at your insides. I don't know how comfortable I feel yet with core temp pills.
Really?
What do you feel?
I mean, I feel fine about it.
Really?
Maybe I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like I've seen them a lot in science. I've seen them at ultras, so I feel comfortable
with it. Do you think they're useful?
I think they are useful. Yeah. I mean, I think like, especially in cases of extremes, they become useful. Like at this event, I think athletes are being really responsible. So there hasn't been an extreme yet, but I think like, you know, if an athlete was getting hyperthermic, I do think it's actually quite useful.
So were there any other things from the research, which is a big part of this project, humongous research investment and tons of research on the female athletes there. Was there anything else that jumped out to you?
They did a whole REDS panel. So they had athletes doing DEXA scans before the event, doing blood biomarkers. They had athletes running through a biomechanics tent every loop while they were out there.
Mm.
And I felt really bad for the biomechanics researcher because the tent was getting like blown to smithereens.
Oh my God.
At times I asked him one day, I was like, how are you doing? And I thought he was being sarcastic and he was like, terrible.
Oh.
But it was for real. So it's also interesting to see, like, it's challenging to do research in the field. And at a 6-day ultra like this, when everyone's tired, like to see the research teams come together and pull it off was amazing.
To go across a force plate every lap, it reminds me of when, you know, like you go in front of a car and you're just like, okay, good form now so I can see my reflection. That would be me every single lap.
Actually, I was thinking about that. To control for bias, I feel like they have to have like a hidden camera 20 steps before the biomechanics tent.
Oh.
And then a camera inside and be like, how are athletes changing their biomechanics?
No, the actual tent should just be a placebo.
Yo. Oh, and the real test
is earlier.
Oh, high five. It's so that's perfect. Genius. Yeah.
Okay. Any other takeaways from the science?
I think just like the fact that they were pouring all the science in, they had a whole field dedicated to like the psychology of the event.
Yeah.
So having athletes take cognitive tests out there, basic fatigue tests. And I'm really curious to see some of the results of that because I think my main takeaway is this event is 50% mental, 50% physical.
Yeah.
And to see, especially what Camille Herron is doing out there right now, the mental psyche that she has to have to engage in this event is like, is her X factor. And I'm really excited that someone's studying it.
What we need to do is one of those tests on you after being there for a week.
I know. They're like, she's 99% zombie.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're 99%. Like if you bled, Lululemon colors would come out.
Yeah, right now. I know. It's kind of embarrassing. But it was actually hard because, so I was slated to be there for the full event.
Yeah.
You and Leo were going to come out and join me, but Leo was like a little under the weather. We have to record a podcast in person. So I had to come home early and it was like one of the hardest decisions I made as a coach to come back. And yeah, it was not easy.
I love how much you care as a coach.
I know I care a little too much.
But your athletes are doing great. And I think the wild thing about these events and the farther you go, the more you see that the training interventions, the types of things we talk about on here matter. But like you said, it's so mental and it's so working on tops of physical barriers we don't understand yet. So hopefully what comes out of this is we start to understand some of the physical limitations that happen at the extremes of human existence a little bit better. And we'll bring you those findings when they come out. In the meantime, I don't know if we have any lessons quite yet.
Actually, I was training Leah for this event and Leah is doing Western States ahead. She has big races coming ahead.
Yeah.
And in the lead up, we were talking about how we were training. I'm like, you know, Leah, I'm just training you to win Western States.
Yeah.
Because actually, truly, I do think there's a point, like, I don't think you can train someone. I don't think the training for mile 80 is fundamentally different than the training for mile 350.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
I think once you step into the unknown, you're into the unknown.
Yeah.
And
I think as long as you're prepared with the basic physiology, I mean, it's high level physiology to do that. I think it then becomes about strategy, mental fueling, like almost the logistical side of it for mile 350 compared to mile 80.
And it gets to the fatigue resistance discussions we have in that fatigue resistance / durability in the literature is barely understood. And I actually want to finish this up with a study that just came out last week that has no findings, but it really points out why no findings is interesting. It's called New Substrate Utilization and durability. And what it found is that there were no associations with an athlete's ability to resist fatigue and their fat oxidation rates. So one of the theories has been, well, the athletes that are really good at the end of long events are just really good at you know, burning fat.
Which is actually Camille Herron. She posted to Instagram her fat oxidation rates and they were off the charts. Yeah.
But the durability has not been associated with traditional lab measures, including that. So how do you even train for this stuff if that doesn't, isn't relevant? And I think what it gets back to is fueling, thinking about the nervous system, thinking about the mental side of it. And then that all interacts with genetics and we're just figuring it out now.
And I think a big part of it for me too is I wanted Leah standing on that starting line, being excited to run and having the hormonal context of being rested and recovered. And I think for that, like erring on the side of just not cooking an athlete to like to try to get more functionally specific for an event like this and to have them standing on the starting line, like rested, ready to go, feeling good. And that was kind of my main priority as a coach. I'm like, Leah, you're good at this. You have fatigue resistance. Let's not cook you.
You did so good.
You did it. I know. I wish I could be there right now though. It's really like- hard. Actually, I reminded myself, Emily Oster, who she's like a parenting data expert. She had a newsletter out this morning about there's no perfect option C.
Okay.
And I was like, I needed to hear that because like, you know, I had two choices. One is I stay there for 10 days. The other choice is I come home and podcast and see you and Leo. And there was no like perfect option C in the middle.
Yeah. You come home and sell the feed rewards.
Yes.
So Megan, that's important.
I know. I figured we couldn't do this podcast remote.
Oh, we could.
And I mean, it would be hard on Zoom.
Oh, it would be so
good. We have so much back and forth. Like what would happen with the time lag?
Oh, Megan, we would crush it. It would just be a different flavor, right?
Yeah, I know. It would be like dragon fruit in the desert.
Actually, after last week's episode, my mom texted, as my mom does. She just sometimes texts these like cryptic things, as all parents do. She's in her 70s, said, you should do interview on the podcast. Like, does that mean she doesn't like what we're doing? So I asked her follow up and she's like, no, I just think you should do an interview. And I'm like, then why did you text it like that? Should be more specific.
Actually, she had a text, I think it was a couple episodes ago. And she was like, I don't like how you use the word porn.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
She said, porn is evil. And your joke was not okay. And it's like, no, mom, sex work has its place in society for some, like some ways of thinking. I'm not smart enough and don't know enough about that to actually understand. So, but my mom over time has interestingly become more liberal. So when I was younger, she wasn't, I mean, I think that they voted for conservative politicians. And then I don't know what happened. It's like the reverse of everybody else's grandparents where my mom got into the liberal side of the internet and now she's like sharing things with me by like these accounts. And I'm like, mom, this is the reverse of the thing that we don't want. So moderate it just a little bit. Okay. Do you want to get on to the next study?
Yeah, it actually ties in. So this is a running economy based study with biomechanics.
Yes.
And I'm so excited to see some of the running economy, like biomechanics, like data that comes out of the further event. They're also doing like sub-max exercise testing and max exercise testing all throughout the training blocks as athletes are preparing for the event.
It's going to be so cool. So this was a new review just came out in Sports Medicine called The Relationship Between Running Biomechanics and Running Economy, a systematic review and meta-analysis of observational studies. So what this gets to do is tell us what form actually translates with less oxygen use at the same pace. As we talk about on the podcast, running economy is the number one goal that we have in training theory. If we can make running take less energy, that's the holy grail. It'll make everything easier, not just like short distance things like 5Ks. It'll be things like faster or further, these types of really long events.
I do that all the time where I'm like the faster, further switch. Yeah, yeah. Very common.
Megan,
at one point I was working for both faster and further.
Anything else we can work for?
Stronger.
Stronger. Okay. So the observational studies were included if they, one, examined associations between running a biomechanics and running economy, two, compared running biomechanics between groups differing in running economy, or three, compared running economy between groups differing in running biomechanics during different types of running. So this led it to 51 studies with over 1,000 participants overall.
And the breakdown of the participants, it was like 900 men and around 220 women being included in these cohorts. And I thought it was really important to do this research because classically, when you look at the field of like biomechanics and running economy, the studies are kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is because it's almost like the Wild West of methodology of what the studies are doing. And so when you do a systematic review on this and a meta-analysis, the researchers tried as possible to help consolidate some of those methodologies to find kind of a unified point.
Yeah.
And I think some of the interesting points, so I went through and found where these studies differed. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, no wonder we're seeing so many competing claims in this field because the studies differ in methodology so much. So in 16 of the studies that they included, they standardized shoe wear.
Okay.
But the other 38 studies did not.
Interesting.
And you can imagine how differences in shoe wear across participants vastly impacts like biomechanics, the relationship between biomechanics and running economy.
Even if the shoes seem like they should be similar.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, the Nike Pegasus versus the Saucony Triumph seem like they should be similar shoes. But if you put people and measure them just in those shoes, you'll find differences across the data points that might not get smoothed out across a population cohort.
And then similarly, so in 27 of the studies, they had them assess running economy during one fixed speed.
Yeah.
And then in the other 24 studies, they had at least two or more speeds going for running economy. You can actually see where that's important too, is like some speeds, like different, there's different biomechanics that suit different speeds.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was truly wild. And then finally too, only some of the studies use methodology to check steady state.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I feel like in this world of biomechanics, there's just a lot of methodology going on.
And think about if you measured on a treadmill. Like some people suck at running on treadmills.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
some people are great at it.
It's totally different. Actually, I tell athletes, sometimes athletes, the first time they run on a treadmill for a while or if like the first time ever, they get sore in places. And like, yeah. Why am I sore? And it's like, oh, the treadmill is, it's a different adaptation stimulus.
I can't really run flat on treadmills. I'm amazing at uphill treadmills.
And it's probably because our treadmills suck shit. You've broken every one of our treadmills.
Maybe that's because I run weird on them. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I must be like Godzilla on that thing.
Actually, every once in a while, before I had hamstring surgery, my hamstring was a little messed up.
Yeah.
I would pull the belt on every treadmill to the right.
Huh. Oh, while you were running?
While I was running. Yeah.
Okay. So you're just like...
I was like, I think I was like putting out more force on my left leg.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So while I was injured here, I did tons and tons of uphill treadmill. And a little aside, what's fascinating is that my heart rate to pace ratios as I've returned are so much better than they've ever been. I don't know what's happened to my physiology, because I'm using like the heart rate band, everything's standardized, but my heart rate is 10 beats per minute lower now than it was. And my theory is that when I'm doing the uphill treadmill, I'm spending so much time at the upper end of Z2 without much impact that my essential mitochondrial efficiency got so much better in a short time that my actual aerobic system is doing the Lord's work right now. So uphill treadmill is really helpful for me. But I think if I was measured on a flat treadmill, I would kind of suck.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I think the confounding variable is?
What?
You have gonads in your knee and DMX in your veins.
DMX in my veins. The rest might have actually been helpful. I think perhaps it basically I've rebounded to where I was pre-COVID.
Yeah. Like I think you have had a long tail with COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. So I never thought I'd be affected by COVID. And then I was one of those people that got wrecked.
I know your theory was, you're like, it's not even going to touch me.
I thought I was one of those people that was immune.
I know. And then 6 months later, you're like, I'm just coming to see the light.
Just coming back. But I feel good. Okay. So let's get into some of the findings. First is that biomechanics can explain 4 to 12% of the variation in running economy across the studies.
Which is a lot.
That's a lot.
But I also think, so if you looked at the studies, there was massive heterogeneity in the populations.
Yeah.
So they were choosing athletes of all different backgrounds, some of them. Some of them had like more specific parameters for how they were including athletes in the study. Yeah. And I do feel like the upper end of that, like 10, 12% is primarily for athletes that haven't done a lot of running.
True. But I've seen in myself in coaching that if you make some interventions, for some people, once it clicks, it clicks.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little bit more bullish on running form changes than other coaches are, just because of how I've experienced my own running journey and how it's changed for me. Okay. Finding two. The big one here is that a higher cadence showed a small significant association with lower oxygen cost. So quick cadence, we always come back to this, is your friend. Don't think about numbers too much. Don't get the 180 number is random and don't think about that. But in general, ideally being over 170 on average on your runs is probably a good place for almost anybody.
It's always nice when a study confirms your bias.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I feel like our bias is because of performance. So we're entering a loop with cadence where yeah. We really truly believe in it and we're looping it over and over.
Higher is not better though.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is a point above, what would you say? Like 195, 200?
I mean, it depends on the individual, right?
Yeah, it's hard to say.
If I went over 180, I'd look so ridiculous. And it's,
oh, you'd still look great.
You think so?
You'd probably look good up to 250.
I don't know. I have been doing, while I was injured, I did a little bit of lifting too. So how do you feel like I look?
Oh, you look awesome.
I do?
I know. Yeah, okay, you look great.
You see, you don't, I feel really like you didn't believe that.
I truly, fully believe. You got DMX in your veins. Okay. I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see all your veins.
You're not checking this tracker.
No.
No checking that tracker.
I check your tracker every day.
Okay.
For the last, what is it, 15 years?
Not quite, but it feels that living with me. Okay, so quick gains. The number two is that smaller vertical displacement resulted in and higher leg stiffness, improved running economy. So how do you do that? How do you reduce your vertical displacement? I think it's one of those things that you don't think through that variable, because if you think less bounce, often athletes lose power. Mm-hmm. What I want them to think more is, okay, slight forward lean and then knee drive via that like forward pawing motion, which we call prancy pony on here, but basically the types of things you would assume.
I do feel like the forward lean kind of helps reduce that bounce element.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Because you don't have to, because when you're not leaning forward slightly, so just a very slight forward lean, you think about your center of gravity has to clear through your hip axis, mm-hmm. which means it has to go over the top. So the slight forward lean means your hip can stay on slightly lower level. And then interestingly, there was no association with foot strikes. So rear foot, midfoot, flat, forefoot, no difference.
Which is kind of helpful to see, because similar to like some of the other stuff we've been talking about, the research historically has been all over the place. Like yeah. you'll see some studies where they're like rear foot is faster, and then some studies where it's like forefoot is faster, and then a whole bunch of studies that say no difference. And so it's kind of nice to see this consolidated as the fact that it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I like that this confirms our biases, which is one, all you really need to think of is quick cadence, slight forward lean, and loose arms, and then relax everything and your form will fall into place from there. Like don't get too caught up in all of the other cues unless you're working with an expert. I think sometimes it's just a way to get so in your own head about running that it mm-hmm. loses its natural element. But the key is that I think this study points out is that the people that tell you you'll just find your most natural form, it's kind of missing the point, because for me at least, like my natural form was informed by being the football player who partially tore his ACL and played through it. It's like, it's just a different athlete than I am now. So I needed to consciously think about switching from a 155 cadence up to a 175 cadence over the course of a few years. Similarly, with the slight forward lean, I used to lean back on uphills, and now a slight forward lean makes me so much more economical. Those little things go a long way.
Okay, I need to borrow your sexy brain for a second.
Oh.
Okay, my form is trash.
Yes.
It is. Yeah, I like how quickly you yes. agreed with that. We both know that. We understand
it. We've internalized it. We've accepted it. We have atoned for our sins.
Yes,
go on.
I know. But in atoning for our sins, we haven't really done anything about it. It just kind of exists there in nature. And I think I'm finally ready to confess.
Can you tell the listeners what happened when I tried to help you with your downhill running form early last year at Caribou Road here outside Boulder? Because I just want them to understand the types of things that you're asking me to wade into. So we're running down the mountain and I'm like, hey, Megan, and I give you some cues. What do you do?
I said some kind F words to you. I don't know. But I also
How much did we talk the rest of that run?
Zero.
Zero.
But you know what? I do think there was a slightly different context.
Okay.
You were like, I'm not going to let you continue this run unless you change your form. So there was there was some different conversation there, but I am ready to change.
You're ready to change.
What does one do like me when my form is trash, it's heinous, I feel ready to change? How would you help me?
Well, I think when we've lost hope this much, the only answer is to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior.
Which is what I've done. And it still looks terrible on video. Okay. I'm like, I'm supposed to be accepting right now and this looks bad.
Yeah, you're like, Mother Gaia, I have done everything right.
This looks terrible.
No, I think just accept it. At this point,
you do think?
Because I think the reason that you think your form sucks is because there's some rotation in your trunk and your arms are carried quite low.
Yes.
But
every time I carry my arms up high, I feel like they're so high and then they're in reality so low.
This study doesn't show any associations with that.
So, I mean, it probably would if they measured it.
No, it's fine, Megan. The point being, you've improved your cadence over time.
Yes.
It's a little bit better than it used to be, which is good. You've gotten better at forward lean. Those are the only two things that matter. So I think in a serious way, embrace that you run a little bit differently.
Yes.
And then make sure you're not carrying shit in your hands, because that does make your hands drop lower. So things like you're not a handheld girl. Like you shouldn't have a handheld bottle. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work for you. You should have a belt or a vest. You shouldn't be carrying your phone in your hand, things like that. Otherwise, I think that it works for you. You know, like
yeah.
for whatever reason, your physiology is optimized to where you need to go be like a corkscrew. And for whatever reason, that seems to work.
I like that I'm a corkscrew, I guess. But it is, I mean, you look at Camille Herron's form, and yeah. her form is actually slightly more unconventional for what like a traditional biomechanics study would measure. And it works for her.
Yeah.
She's set so many like records in this process of further. And I love, she too has also acknowledged, she's like, my form is different. It's unique, but it works for me.
Yeah.
And I think if you're at that point, lean into it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm at that point.
Lean into it. Sheryl Sandberg it.
I know.
Lean
yeah.
in.
Aesthetically, I'm like, I don't want to lean into this crap. It looks gross.
No, I think you look beautiful and it works. So
yeah.
And interestingly, as an anecdote, we've commented on this before. Like if you go to a track meet, the women's fields will generally have much more varying types of forms than mm-hmm. the men's fields.
Yes. Yeah.
And my guess is it's because the biomechanical differences between female runners is much higher, given things like hip angles and all of that, the types of measurements that can change. Whereas in men, there's a more narrow band of what the body morphologically does, though there's still a lot of variation, right? Like I have those childbearing hips.
You have not earned that status yet.
I have.
When have you pooped out a child?
But you know I could. Couldn't I?
Maybe,
not pain-wise.
Maybe while listening to DMX.
Okay. Yeah. Orf. Yeah. Awesome. Do you want to get on to vertical climate chain or straight to news and fun things?
Let's get straight to news and fun things.
All right. We'll save that for next week.
Yeah.
But actually, before we do that, I'll read a question from Patreon. That's the second question. It's kind of a follow-up here. Mm-hmm. And so as always, patreon.com/swap, S-W-A-P. That's where you get bonus podcasts every week. It's where our writing is going, all of our content, plus tons of really cool stories. The other week, a listener messaged and said, where in Boulder would you suggest getting eloped or doing an elopement? And I suggested our favorite secret spot, Megan. You know where we go. I'm not going to say it out here. And I gave coordinates. And we got wedding photos the other day.
It was so cool. And also, I love you just sent them to me without any context.
Oh, yeah.
I just got wedding photos of people. And then I realized it was in this spot and I put two and two together.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is the coolest shit ever.
So lots of cool things on Patreon.
It's so cool. Also, how was your solo podcast episode this week?
It was interesting. So I started off and it was a little awkward, but then over time,
Found your stride.
20 questions.
Yeah. I'm sure people loved it. They're like, Megan, please do not come back.
No, they all
stay forever at further ordering room service.
We got a lot of messages being like, please come back sooner rather than later. But I think people like that. I just went through tons of questions.
I'm impressed that you did that. It's not easy to talk solo into a microphone.
There should be a lot of disclaimers because usually you put it like, you know, you temper whatever big point I'm making. And so when I say that I made...
Like the fact that you have childbearing hips.
When I say I made a Let's Run digression, it got a little intense at times.
Oh, man.
But people have to pay us, so...
I need to go back and listen to it.
Nope. So patreon.com/all. So here's a question from there. I have another, perhaps more interesting question. This is off of the VK training question. When power hiking uphill, is it better to lean forward as much as possible or try not to lean forward and be more upright? It is my impression that most coaches recommend being as upright as possible to, quote, open the airways and to optimize the ability to, quote, breathe more deeply, etc. It is, however, my impression that the opposite is true. It is my suspicion that being more prone is better when ascending steep hills.
Ooh, I like this. Lean the heck forward.
Lean forward.
Toss that lean. Yeah.
It's a follow-up on the form discussion. Those two tips we gave are on flat ground. But when you're going uphill, lean forward more. So the steeper it gets, the more you lean forward. And you can see this if you look at any like image from a champion vertical climber runner. Mm-hmm. They're leaning forward.
Oh, they're
really
leaning so far forward. They're basically like kissing the mountain.
And I think that might be one reason the uphill treadmill has been so helpful for me. I've done a lot at 20% recently, and it encourages this forward lean so much. I engage my glutes so much, and then that power is translating to outside. So this is another one of those barometers of how much someone understands elite running, mm-hmm. where we're all trying to be elite athletes in our own context. Your airways are fine. I promise. You're getting plenty of oxygen. Yeah. Lean the fuck forward.
Yeah, you can't make love to the mountain unless you're much closer to it.
I don't know, Megan.
It's like being at a slow dance in sixth grade and you're supposed to be like, you know, a whole arm's length away from each other. That's like the backwards lean.
There's a lot of interesting positions. Remember someone got us that book of like a position Bible or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. It was like 500 of them.
Yeah.
They're basically, I mean, honestly, like 200 of them are all the same.
I honestly think there's three and just variations.
That's
off
exactly.
Of,
yeah, that's my point.
But no,
yeah.
No, there are some weird ones. Remember some of the really weird ones? Maybe that's what all these coaches have been recommending all along.
I know. Yeah. So lean forward.
Yeah.
There was only one position.
Okay. Let's go on to news and fun things. The very first one that I thought was fascinating is we got sent in this from a listener that in Spain, that there was an amateur bike race and 182 athletes were registered. They announced that at the finish line, there would be drug testing. 130 of those athletes dropped out before the finish.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
Okay. Question for you. Do you think the same thing would happen over here in the US? Like, are we facing slightly different doping environments here in the US versus like somewhere like an amateur bike race in Spain?
Well, I think the first question is that a sign that these athletes are doping, or is that a sign that they don't want their privacy invaded.
Or there's something else going on. Or do we trust, I was actually thinking that too. Do we trust the anti-doping agency?
Or there are lots of attacks on the road or whatever. Yeah. Who knows what could cause. But if we assume that that is tacit admission to doping, in the same way that athletes that have whereabouts failures and don't show up for their doping tests will get pinged and get banned for as if they had been doping.
What do you think the percentage is on the actual whereabouts failures? Because like truly probably some of those are actually hold. Do you think it's like 75% case that if you have multiple whereabouts failures that it's actually like a tacit admission to doping?
I think if you have three of them, it's 100% or 99.5% because once you get two, you would absolutely be like, understand.
I'm living at home.
Yeah, yes, so you have to get three times drug testers have to show up at your door and you not appear. And you have to give them the windows. In fact, there was a really interesting story from this past week where an athlete named Purity Komen was banned for whereabouts failures.
That's an unfortunate name.
It is. It is unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. Purity.
Clean as the day is long.
Maybe it's a great name. They're going to use that in her legal case.
I actually really felt for her because in the report on it that they issued, they had her texts and she did the runaround and essentially got them to show up at the wrong place, all of that. But then after the very last one, she's like, look, my athletic career is over. Thank you for your time. Yeah. I accept the ban. And point being, like, whereabouts failures are doping failures, I think, when they happen multiple times. But for these athletes, like, I do not think you would see that in the US for sure. And it overlaps a little bit with what we experienced, I think, when we raced overseas. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder whether the cultural differences in ideas about doping that you see in the professional cycling peloton are still existing in things like trail running. I'd be curious, actually, if there's any listeners out there that live in Spain or Italy or France or whatever, if you've noticed a difference in culture among some of your friends, like maybe a 55-year-old athlete that's taking testosterone or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just because when we went over there, there was just people discussing these topics in a way that in the US, they never would. They would be like, what are you even doing right now? And I don't know if that's changed. That's been a while since then.
Do you know what actually I'm thinking about as I'm sitting here is a parallel cultural change in how we talk about REDS. Oh. Like, I feel like the conversations surrounding low energy availability in REDS are fundamentally different in the US than overseas and internationally. Like in the US, I feel like there's been a big push of education surrounding the importance of like preventing low energy availability and like the downstream ramifications of REDS.
Yeah.
Whereas when I work with international athletes, it is so much harder to convince them of the importance of like adequately fueling the body.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if because almost like those two conversations are related to health, if it's just like a different conversation.
Interesting.
Different conversations surrounding health and the importance of health and like also clean sport.
Maybe. I mean, what I've heard from especially female athletes overseas is that they'll get comments sometimes that they, if they got in the US, they would like, you know, it would be so anomalous. But what they'll get over there sometimes is people saying, you don't look like an athlete on the podium or things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, that's what an athlete on the podium looks like. And I don't understand where the cultural miss is. My guess is it's more of not cultural, it's more age.
Yes.
And the same, because it's almost always like some old dude that says that sort of thing. So when it comes to, you know, amateur doping, don't do it first, obviously. But two, I think that maybe it's just more accepted, or maybe that's not what this is measuring. I just thought this was an interesting story because I think that competition at all levels are more complicated than it sometimes seems on the surface. And it's a reminder, it's not about competing with others or beating others. It's about being a happy, ethical, you know, fulfilled person in the journey. So try not to let like your place in a race get down on you too much because like, who knows what's going on ahead of you? Who knows what's going on behind you? You're fucking awesome the way you are.
I also feel like there's almost this like sense of, or like this viewpoint that the ethics apply only to elite athletes.
Yeah.
But actually it's probably even more prevalent sometimes in like age group masters athletes, especially where like hormones like testosterone make even more of a difference.
Yeah.
And I feel like ethics apply there too. And I think it is, I feel like there needs to be some like research studies on this. Mm. Like you could do a research study where you actually just surprise people at the end of a race and see what happens. And like in the amateur world, I'd be really curious.
Yeah. So interesting. Okay. Number two, if you saw this last week, you will know what we're talking about. Visma Lisabike, the top cycling team in the world, released their new aero helmets along with a lot of the other members of the peloton that they wear during time trials. And these helmets are the weirdest looking thing I've ever seen. How would you describe them?
Okay. Do you know what my hot take is?
What?
I love them.
You love them?
They are weird. They look like something that you would see in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like huge, boxy. They actually expanded the vision on them so you can like have like a much more of a 360 view.
So it comes off the front of the head like a triangle.
Yeah.
Like a foot in front of the head.
It actually looks like a lot like, you know, the Tesla truck thing.
Oh, the Cybertruck.
The Cybertruck. Oh. It looks a lot like that, but on a body.
It looks, that's a really bad endorsement of these helmets, Megan. Do you want a Cybertruck now?
I mean, no, I don't. I saw one in Palm Springs though. And I was like, that is weird.
What did it look like?
It looked like a tank. It was very strange.
Okay.
Yes. But I feel like that is what it is on these people's heads, on cyclists' heads.
It's really interesting to think about the aero technology. I think they were designed by Giro, the helmet making company, and they're designed to fill the empty space of air between the hands and the body when you're down in that little aero position. But interestingly, Visma Lisa Bike underperformed at the time trials wearing these helmets relative to other teams. So it might be one of those places where wind tunnel data and real world data vary a little, because my guess is that helmet, that like foot in front of your head, if you're not in a perfect aero position or aren't able to maintain it, maybe it's not as beneficial.
Or they are so embarrassed that they're like, oh, yeah, their performances got impacted.
You can't exercise on shame. No, shame isn't the right thing.
Yeah. They took so much flack for this. I'm actually a little bit confused. Like, I feel like within sport, like, yeah, and within the realm of science, you should be allowed to be weird and different and see what happens.
Well, the UCI, the cycling governing body, the very next day posted on Twitter, "We are investigating aero helmets."
I love
that. That's how you know your fashion choices are bad. Yeah. When the governing body's immediately like, no, no. They're like doing the RuPaul drag race. It's like, zero. You are off the show.
Where do you think it's going to lead, though? Like, do you think it's going to lead? Do you think like trying the science and investing in the science is going to lead somewhere cool?
I think it's going to just lead to more regulation in the same way that bikes did. So back in the 1980s, you had like the Superman bikes, the Chris Boardman style bikes, mm-hmm, which put athletes in this position where, talk about horizontal, being ready for the lovemaking session. They're like fully horizontal with their arms out.
At least 150 positions on this bike.
Yes, exactly. And they banned that very quickly. And so now like the reach requirements of bikes are really well regulated. I think similarly, this is the moment to be like, you know, you probably do need to regulate just so that it doesn't become this arms race where
they're literally not just in a Tesla.
Yeah. And I mean, even independent of that, based on the current rules, it almost looks to me like a fairing. So a fairing is something that you can put on one of these moving things to give it almost like a sail-like effect. Mm. I imagine you could design one of these to be a head sail. You know? Okay. And so you can see where it can get worse and worse from here.
Or you can see where that becomes dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, you're taking a head sail at 60 miles an hour and it's like Jonas is going to go flying.
So our official position on the SWAT podcast, this helmet, probably not great, but
you know, it's interesting. We're talking about it.
And if you give us a shoe that has 50 millimeters of stack height and makes us run faster, we're all about it. So maybe we're hypocrites.
It reminds me of the Hoka shoe that had the talon off the back of it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Nothing.
10-9.
I don't think anything ever became of that.
Yeah. I don't know what they were doing there.
No. They were trying to become Jonas Vindigo.
Yeah. Was that before this podcast existed? It might have been.
I think it was in the early. We've commented on it before. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. So for those that don't know or are new to the podcast, Hoka released this shoe a number of years ago that had a wing on the back that probably went about 4 inches off the back of the shoe.
I mean, it's far enough that I would not want to walk in crowds with these shoes.
And so what it was made is specifically for downhill running, almost like a ski snowboard. I don't even know. And to this day, I don't understand the rationale because it costs these companies a lot of money to bring a shoe to market. So was this almost like their further, where they're like, it's not about the money we make from it directly. It's about the advertisements we get. So wouldn't be talking about Hoka on the podcast otherwise.
That's true. Well, do you know what's interesting about Lululemon further? They've made and developed all these amazing ice products, like the Velcro on their ice bandanas. It blew my mind more than anything this week. And I had dragon fruit. But
sorry, took me a second. You're like, and I had dragon fruit.
I know. The Velcro blew my mind more than dragon fruit, but they're not bringing the products to market because it takes so much to bring a product to market. And I imagine the market for an ice bandana compared to like a tank top is much lower.
Yeah.
I was sad. I was like, give me the performance cooling products.
Okay. Let's go on to the next one. This is the DMT study. That is so, so fascinating here. So this was in, I believe, Nature Scientific Reports.
Scientific Reports, yeah.
So it did prospective and placebo-controlled data sets. So essentially two little studies in one.
Essentially, yeah, they combined two different studies and they wanted to do that to be able to pool the data. It does have like less generalizability when you pull two studies together with different methodology. The ability to then go on and be like, oh, we hypothesize it applies in this way and like these ways to the general population is a little bit different because you're pooling two studies.
Okay. So I just wanted to read the money finding here. Changes in depression and trait anxiety correlated with acute peak experiences assessed via, quote, oceanic boundlessness. So what that means is that in this study, it's starting to show that these types of drugs, these psychedelics, might have beneficial effects in depression for some people. And according to this study, that it's associated with that term, oceanic boundlessness.
How wild is
that? I never heard it.
Also, these were healthy patients that were getting IV DMT. So these patients had like never had any like mental health background or history. And so they were experiencing benefits in like depressive symptomatology without even having experienced depression before. So just like how they were rating like depression and anxiety symptoms.
So the oceanic boundlessness term means a state of consciousness where one feels a sense of unity, interconnectedness, or dissolution of the self, often described as merging with the environment or the universe.
Wow.
Oceanic.
That sounds wonderful.
One with the dolphins.
Do you want to be one with the dolphins?
I don't think in theory I do, or in practice I do, but in theory I do. So like in practice, it scares the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
Just because like what happens when you go into the brain and do this to it. But in theory, like it sounds quite wonderful to be, essentially be content with the idea of death,
you know?
Because like death scares me. I think it scares almost everybody who thinks about it. And like DMT is essentially the anti-death drug.
Yeah. It's kind of curious. I also wonder if there's like other ways to get to oceanic boundlessness. It reminds me of my octopus teacher.
Yeah.
Do you remember that documentary where
the guy really wanted to fuck the octopus?
Exactly. Yeah, that was that was like the core principle of it. But I feel like he achieved oceanic boundlessness through other ways.
So do we have to fuck octopuses?
Or take DMT. Our two options. I thought this study was pretty fascinating, actually.
Yeah, so I've talked to a few athletes that have gone through these experiences. We have never done psychedelics. But I'm so curious to see where it goes from here in the treatment of mental health issues. And similarly, how it affects things like ultra performance.
Yes.
Yeah. Because when you talk about these events being 50% mental and how are athletes able to kind of dissolve the ego and still be out there for an extended period of time? Like, what are Courtney's hallucinations other than a feeling of oceanic boundlessness at times? So I think there's relations here with endurance and athletics that we don't understand yet. I mean, we're just starting to understand things like how it might impact mental health. Like ultras are a while down the line, but maybe further 2044 is going to have some DMT involved.
Well, maybe that's actually my answer, is that I'm not zombified. I'm experiencing oceanic boundlessness as a result of being there, mild forms.
You're one with the dragon fruit?
I'm one with the dragon fruit. Okay. That must be what it is. Okay, but what I thought was interesting though in the study is that, so they had these experiences, but when you looked at other like positive psychological factors like well-being, optimism, gratitude, nature-relatedness, and meaning in life, which you would expect would relate with oceanic boundlessness, there were no differences between groups.
Huh.
And I think some of the theory is that they had these like participants, it was like a short dose of DMT. Yeah. They were literally in an fMRI machine as this was happening. So I imagine your ability to experience oceanic boundlessness while in an MRI machine is a little bit clouded unless DMX involved.
DMX, DMT.
Uh-huh.
Arf, arf.
Yes.
Oh my
Study
God.
It.
But maybe that's like a final point on this that's curious, is that these types of drugs don't seem to be about joy.
No,
right?
Yeah.
It seems to be about something else.
Well, maybe it's the prelude to joy, if that makes sense.
Or maybe it's just an understanding that we all die and it's okay.
Yeah. But maybe that's what you need to unlock pure joy.
Or to,
In 6 months. What you're saying.
DMT is, I call it the anti-death drug, but that's because it's the death drug, right? Like it's released when you're dying. And so it is very cool to think about getting the brain systems, rewiring them this way, and what might happen. So I think this is a place to pay attention to. I think in addition to AI, the psychedelic field is going to change rapidly. In fact, the book that I teased on here is all about the mix of psychedelics and AI for that reason, because I think that what the world we look at in 30 years, like for our children and our children's children, is going to involve this type of medication when needed in ways that we can't even predict now, that goes far beyond this type of thing.
Well, I might need medication to even conceive of that.
Yeah.
Now that we have Leo in the world, I actually become really sensitive when I think about that.
Sensitive about what?
Just like, what is the world going to look like in 30 years?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we'll be old and have grayer hairs and things like that, and be probably in a state of more oceanic boundlessness, but Leo will be in his like peak and prime. And actually we will be too, but it scares me a little bit.
It took having a kid to think about that.
No, I mean, I actively thought about it, but now I really think about it.
Yeah. And your one experience with like drugs was having THC and then in the bathtub naked screaming about climate change. So maybe your version of oceanic boundlessness is a little bit more panicky than some of the people in this study.
I know. And I do think I don't think my brain would respond well to this.
I think it would be interesting.
You do?
I think we should do a guided a guided journey into the ocean.
Well, the guided journey is very different than being an fMRI machine.
Some octopuses are calling our names.
I would do it for the octopus.
Okay, do it for the octopus. Okay, next up is the UTMB start lists were released. And, you know, we've had a bunch of series on this podcast about the whole controversy. But once the start list came out, typically deep stacked start lists. So it seems like no boycott has really taken shape in a substantial manner.
It's curious that they released the start list already.
Well, I mean, the lotteries and stuff have already happened. So
yeah.
So I think it's just traditional
like hype. I saw Iron Far did kind of like a preview on it.
Yeah.
What percentage of those athletes do you think will actually show up to the starting line?
I mean, it's probably usual. I think nothing really has changed.
Not because of the boycott, just because I think whenever there is a starting list that gets prepared like months in advance, there is a lot of attrition on it.
That's right. And I think it'll just be the normal numbers.
Yes.
So my point here is just.
But what do you think are the normal numbers?
Maybe 65%, something like that.
65% attrition?
Two-thirds show up.
Yeah, I was going to say 30% attrition was.
But including, I think Jim Walmsley might have been on there. So essentially crickets appeared after the boycotts, which again, I think it's the way it's going to be. So might as well accept this new world order. So UTMB start list, all the boycotts we talked about kind of ended up being a nothing burger.
Are we going to go to Chamonix this year?
No, we're not. We are going to maintain our principled boycott because traveling overseas
with a baby is hard. Yeah.
Still. But I, as always, we wish UTMB success and we're happy that at least I think some good things came out of that and it doesn't need to be a boycott, at least for now.
And I do think UTMB talk about like the growth of trail running. So much of that has been done by UTMB. And I think it's only going to continue to elevate the growth of trail and ultra running.
But we've been burned before. Our naive approach to business and things, I think sometimes can get in the way when you start to think like, if we say, talk about UTMB for me now, when I talk about it, I'm thinking of, oh, the person at UTMB that reached out to me after our podcast.
And I'm was like, so kind.
I love that person.
Yeah.
But what if that was replaced by
oceanic boundlessness?
No, I'm just kidding. A tech company.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Like, so if Facebook reached out and said something, I wouldn't think Facebook's any less evil. Right. And the idea being that it's not the individuals that are evil. The individuals are great. They're trying to do their best, but it adds together to create a corporation that doesn't have the best interests of individuals or the Republic at heart. So obviously UTMB not going to ruin democracy, but might not do some good things to trail running. Okay, next up. This is an interesting study that just came out on local heat and mitochondria adaptations. We didn't want to get into too many details, which is why it's down here, but it is wild. So they had athletes do 3 weeks of bike sessions with just one leg heated to 40 degrees Celsius. So I don't know exactly how they did this. Essentially just a big heating pad on one leg.
It's exactly what it sounded like. They just like heated that one single leg.
Yeah.
I would love to be in the room as they were coming up with this study design. We're like, we're just going to heat a leg.
Science is wild.
Science is cool. Yeah.
So for me, I always thought that these would come from core temp changes, right?
Yes,
like a lot of the study protocols that we talk about with blood volume and things are wearing tons of clothes or doing a hot tub or sauna. So that's more core tempy. This is just that one leg. And they did biopsies before and after. And afterward, the athletes in that one leg had increased mitochondrial enzyme activity. So the sign of beneficial adaptations in the leg that was heated. So I don't know exactly what the takeaway here is. Maybe just that, again, heat is your friend. Because you probably don't need to locally heat, just like kind of being warm sometimes during training is helpful.
I wonder if the study, remember the blanket company that it was like the infrared blanket?
Yeah.
They reached out to our podcast at one point. I wonder if the study was sponsored by them. What a perfect study for the infrared blanket company.
We've gotten a lot of listeners ask about the sauna blankets, things like that.
Yeah.
Which
they scare me a little bit. Just
why?
I mean,
it's just like wearing a very warm blanket. It's
I know.
Like really,
actually, which is my dream. I love warm blankets.
I sleep very hot. So sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and feel like one of those is on me.
Yeah.
So why would it be any different than just any type of warm blanket, essentially, in terms of fear?
I don't know. There's something about it, just like the infrared nature. I just feel like I'm cooking myself. I'm not. This is not true. Yeah. Infrared blankets seem great. But for whatever reason, I have like skeptical bias.
It does seem kind of like a nightmare to get so sweaty in that blanket.
Well, I just feel like I'm like cooking myself. I guess functionally you're doing that in a sauna too. But I just feel like having it be on my skin, I feel like, or like on my body, I feel like I'm cooking myself like a well-done burrito.
We love this though.
I know.
We uplift this. Yes. So again, heat once or twice a week is your friend. Try to keep it going year round as much as you can. A follow up from last week that's really interesting. We talked about super sapiens falling by the wayside. Just this week, in the ultimate dose of irony, over the counter continuous glucose monitors were just approved. So as soon as the continuous glucose monitor company goes out of business, who couldn't get FDA approval, this stuff is now approved. It shows that sometimes business success is just kind of luck of the draw and timing.
Which is really hard. Do you actually think it was like lucky or ironic timing? Like, do you think actually they knew Super Sapiens? So this company was Dexcom. They've been in business since 1999. They've been doing a bunch of different like continuous glucose monitoring iterations, but not quite the same technology. They're using functionally the same technology as Super Sapiens.
Yeah.
Do you think it was ironic timing, or do you think like it is so close that do you think it was like well positioned to be able to be like, oh, we're now coming in after Super Sapiens has closed?
I think distinction without a difference, but either way, I think it's just the nature of the process. What it reminds me of is General Magic, the tech company in the early 90s, who essentially created a smartphone before there were any apps for smartphones, before there was any capability to really level up smartphones. And I think iPhone didn't come until the late 2000s, right? Like 2007 or something. And I think with this, it was a little bit closer. But Super Sapiens might have just been a little bit too soon for this world.
Well, it's hard because I feel like so much of it hinged on FDA approval.
Yeah.
And I imagine Super Sapiens came into the market at a time when like COVID was really hot. And I think FDA approval became more challenging during that time. And I actually feel for them because it's like the technology was there. Everything was there. I just think that because they couldn't close the FDA deal and get it into US markets, it really hindered their ability to actually like be able to do anything with it.
Yeah. So much of success is just about riding the right wave at the right time.
Which is scary when you think about it.
So Kara Swisher has this term called frothy markets. So like in a frothy market, like when the market's going up, a lot of weird ideas come out and seem to succeed or succeed, you know, or it's a ZERP, a zero interest rate phenomenon is something other people say.
It sounds like a drug.
But I think sometimes we lose sight of that in our own personal endeavors where like for us, yes, the podcast has been successful beyond our wildest dreams, but we started it during the pandemic and rode a wave of podcasts becoming more acceptable outside of people that were just really in certain types of fields, right?
And also riding a trail running and ultra running wave.
Yeah, which is feed, a great example.
Yes, yeah.
Actually, let's take a step back. I assume the feed won't listen this far. So I wanted to speculate a little bit about why the feed is moving into running.
Yes.
So that's probably one thing you've seen. It's not just us, right? Like Courtney DeWalter is sponsored now.
Laura Green posted a really funny video this morning from the feed. Yeah.
Use our code.
Yes.
/swap. But you can also use their codes. But the point just being like, that's clearly we're getting lucky to hit a wave at the right time where the podcast is big enough, our reach is strong enough, our listeners are awesome enough that it just coincides with this one thing. That is not our podcast quote success. That is, we happen to catch a wave. If we were doing this in 2016, we'd be not making any money doing it, you know? And it's kind of like one of those complicated situations and why I think shooting your shot is so important.
Oh, it's like ride as many waves as possible.
Yeah.
Like take the little guys and see what, maybe it becomes a big one, you know?
Oh yeah. It's like you're out in the ocean and it's like the little guy can become the tsunami. You just don't know.
Yeah.
And I think it's like liberating in some ways. Like I think running coaching similarly, like starting running coaching a little over 10 years ago was like the perfect time for people getting more comfortable being on spreadsheets and doing collaborative training documents. And it was just kind of lucky.
Actually, wasn't it almost exactly 10 years ago? Didn't you have that reflection?
My early athletes are over 10 years now.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Which is wild. In the mid 3,000, like 3,500 days.
I think I'm still like—
good numbers, David.
So you existed in coaching before I joined.
Yeah.
And I think Leah is one of my earliest athletes.
That's so cool.
How cool is that? Now she's running— she's probably on like mile 370 by now.
Yeah. So I think the feed is really interesting when we think about the concept of all of these other shoe companies and things. Like, I think that there's this wave forming where money is going to be coming to trail running in a corporate way because it is a profit driver, not just like a side hustle. And I think some companies are starting to realize that, like Lululemon. I think some are a little behind, like Nike. I think Nike has not put their full weight into the world yet.
When they put full weight behind something, it is huge. Yeah. A Nike trail is big, but I don't think they've put like—
Clearly it's not the resources of Nike running Nike basketball, whatever. Lululemon running is now like huge, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like as much as Lululemon yoga probably. And so I think there's a lot of really interesting things bubbling up right now. And if you have an opportunity to put yourself in something that might catch one of these waves, because like it is just starting, it is not starting to crest yet. It is going to be insane in the future, whether that's a social media account, your own podcast, writing, any of those things. Now's the time to be like, I'm no longer can wait. I'm going to make the leap now.
And also too, it's like, okay, like if waves fizzle out,
oh yeah,
it just happens. Like, so sometimes it's like often not even your fault. It's just the reality of the wave and the markets and the time. And in like Super Sapiens case, COVID, you know?
Yeah. So one final follow-up on the company that, so last week you talked about My Firm Tech, which made wearables for genitals. The CEO reached out, very kind guy. Apparently his daughter-in-law is an avid listener. So to her, thank you. And it's one of those moments of like a small world. But apparently this company, I'm going to give them some free press, My Firm Tech, their next technological innovation is not just going to be for men. It's expanding. And they said that their 2025 stuff is going to blow the world apart. It's going to be so good. So,
okay. It's not just for men. Where does it go?
I don't know, Megan.
It's for women. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. But
and,
like,
and probably non-binary people. Everything.
Yeah. But where? How? Where?
I don't know, Megan.
Yeah. Is it a diva cup? Okay. A diva cup that measures things?
All I know is that I heard a magic school bus was involved. Miss Frazzle is going to be going to some interesting places in 2025. Do you want to get on to hot takes?
Let's do hot takes. I love hot takes.
Okay. I want to start with the first one.
What?
This is a David hot take.
I was going to say, I feel like this is coming from the depths of your brain.
Yes, very much so. This is my think piece. People always hate SNL, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Ever since I was young. Every generation, they're like always harken back to the generation before. And that was really drawn home to me this week. So last week, you probably saw the response to the State of the Union where Katie Britt did the GOP response. And you can watch just a few seconds of that speech and get the idea that like there was an issue there. Like she just kind of misread the room a little bit when it came to her tone and how she was going to do it.
Okay. But I was at Further during this time, like literally in my zombie mode, eating dragon fruit. And I didn't even know what was going on. So I was seeing all these memes of Katie Britt and I was like, clearly I've missed something, but I am in another world right now.
Yeah. And so basically what she did is she got up there and talked very firmly about everything.
Okay. But I feel for her.
Okay. And that's my hot take.
Is that your hot take?
Well, that's my brain dump here.
Yeah.
So my think piece. Should I let you go first?
Okay. Yes. Well, no, you go first.
Okay. So my think piece here is I was listening to Olivia Rodrigo during my workout yesterday.
Yeah.
And she, the very first song on her album, All American Bitch, great song. But I think it points out a little bit what it must feel like to be a woman in the world and to have to live contradictions.
Yes. Yeah.
And she talks in a very sweet voice and she's like, I'm a mother and a total machine. And I almost feel like that's kind of what Katie Britt was trying to do there in the sense of she was in a kitchen being a mother and all that. Great. But then also she needed to talk like this because she needed to be a total machine, similar to Taylor Swift's song, The Man, where it's like, so in other words, like I had so much empathy for her when I saw that, because to me, my think piece that I'm not comfortable enough to talk about, that's why it's at the end of the podcast, is that you know, obviously she gets up there and it's like, it did not go great. Is that the type of experience that is like her internalizing essentially things that are hard on all women? Mm-hmm. So is that ridiculous?
No, I actually agree with that. I think for me, it was a combination of that. Like, it's almost like sometimes as a woman, when you're talking, you feel like you have to compensate and you can't be like laid back or you can't be conversational and it
make
has
jokes.
To make jokes. It has to come as
what I thought about is you, because like on the podcast, you're so excited and happy and funny. And that's how she actually, so I saw a clip of her talking just like, hey, watch the State of the Union tonight and then I'll do a response. And it was like, oh, that's that person, independent of politics. Like we're not talking her political leanings here. That's not.
Which I disagree with, but.
Yeah, obviously.
Yes, yeah.
But like but you can still feel for the individual. Even
yes, and I do.
You kind of had some, I had some schadenfreude when I saw that, but I felt sorry for her too.
Well, actually the reason that I felt strong for her is I feel like it's what happens when you combine that piece of being a woman and trying to speak firmly with also being extremely nervous. Yeah. And I have experienced that extremely nervous side of things. And sometimes it makes you speak in ways that are just strange. And I think I watched that and I had a lot of empathy. And I was like, this is just someone who's probably very nervous and is doing something on public television that she's never done before.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It made me, I really fell for her.
But the connection to SNL is that Scarlett Johansson.
Oh, it was so good.
Came on SNL and did a parody of it. Please go watch it. It might be some of the best acting I've ever seen. The way it embodies the entire idea of it, the entire vibe of it
was
wild. And then I went and clicked on some of the comments and basically everyone is hating on SNL, not politically, just because saying it's not funny. And I'm like, this is literally one of the most brilliant pieces of comedic art and parody we've ever seen. It's like only brilliance, like a brilliant show can create that. And it's kind of funny that throughout history, SNL is always better the previous generation. Just like everyone's like that.
But I think you can also exist in two places where like the comedic art is amazing and then you can also hold empathy for what Katie Britt went through.
For sure,
and
for sure.
I think we both feel that is like, that was in Scarlett Johansson's performance. Insane.
Oh my God.
It was so good.
Yeah.
But then also like for Katie Britt, it's like, I really hope you know, even though I disagree with her politically, I really hope she finds another raid, like another wave to ride. And yeah,
hopefully not a political one.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
She can make a podcast. You can get maybe the feed. Hey, if you want to move into a new demographic that you probably haven't explored yet, Katie Britt, Alabama senators. Sell some, I don't know, something for the back. You know what she's going to do?
She's a throat lozenge.
She's going to say she's going to put some precision gels in her kitchen where she was doing the speech. Okay, on to hot takes. One, so this is, as always, is from listeners. Carbs you throw up in your mouth are able to be re-swallowed and you're able to re-swallow should count twice. Working on gut training, just consume 210 grams of carbs in 1 hour, 47 minutes. Woof.
Wow, that's a commitment to the bit.
Yeah, a little excessive.
That actually probably is. I mean, I think 210 grams of carbs in that period of time is probably actually it's pushing it.
It's like 120
if you're throwing
average.
Up in your mouth though, you're definitely pushing it.
That is a sign that you should probably dial back or change your fuel source. But that's pushing the 120 because, like, again, like we talked about last week, you want to make sure that that first hour isn't already 120, or you might end up being a little bit over the top. So 75 to 90 grams per hour is much more your friend than 210 in an hour 47.
Especially when throwing up in your mouth. Do you want to know something interesting?
What?
Leah's first time ever throwing up in an ultra was at Further. Isn't that wild?
How did she feel?
She felt so much better after. She went on and clicked off like some of her best like laps. And I'm like, it's vomit and rally.
Once you go puke, you never go back.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm a big fan. Okay, next one. I no longer care about whether my watch can give me accurate heart rate data. I just want accurate elevation data.
Ooh, I actually really align with this hot take because I got a new watch because my elevation data on my watch was bonkers bad.
Yeah.
It had me just like dropping off cliffs and coming back. It was great actually because I would go for a flat run and be like, you ran 1400 feet of vert.
It has started to feel like your gaps have gotten slower, your great adjusted paces because you don't have the terrible watch anymore.
I know. My watch is trusty reliable now. I don't know. It was a Garmin. I don't know what had happened to it, but my new Garmin works.
Yeah. And yeah. I've seen too that there's some routes where elevation just isn't reliable, especially short little uphills. So if you ever do a route that has like a bunch of punchy little ups and downs, like it's never going to measure that 10 foot up that you're doing over top of a bike.
I know.
A bike lane.
Isn't it so sad? You feel like you're going uphill. And sometimes I have vert like live displaying on my watch and it doesn't even move. And I'm like, I'm charging up this beast of a hill.
Yeah. So especially like for athletes in places that have a lot of hills like that, like North Carolina or Minnesota or whatever, your vert's probably more than you think it is. And so take that into account as you go. Okay. Number three, this is from a listener. Overheard in a Pennsylvania grocery store, quote, actually, it has been proven that just thinking about exercise is as effective as exercise. Your brain doesn't know the difference. It's a great overheard.
That is a great overheard. Yeah. This is interesting. You know, maybe thinking about Further is just as effective as Further.
Yeah. Just think about running for 6 days.
I know. I'm like, I can no longer walk a half mile to get a cheeseburger.
Okay. So I think there's an element of truth in this.
I actually do too. Yeah.
That what you think you are plays a large role in what you become athletically just because of the chemical context of all the stimuli you put your body under. So all what we talk about when we talk about stress are chemical reactions in your body. If those chemical reactions are in a really high cortisol state or in the type of state where you're really doubting yourself, you're probably going to adapt a little bit more to your actual thoughts than you think because all our thoughts as well inform the chemical nature. So when we're doing that, we need to think a little bit about the chemical nature of our body. So in other words, I think this person was a physiologist.
Oh, they
should be hired by Lululemon.
And they're like, I'm thinking my mitochondria into strong gains. But I actually think there's a step downstream too, in that the 5 or 10 people that you're around the most also influence your physiology via similar chemical processes.
What do I do to your physiology?
Oh, you crush it. I crush it. Yeah. Uh-huh. You uplift me in so many ways.
Me or dragon fruit?
You significantly more than dragon fruit. I was going to say-
Me or orange slices?
Minorly more than orange slices. Minorly more.
It's much closer. Yes. Me or the room service cheeseburger?
Room service cheeseburger. Okay.
No. If you didn't say the room service cheeseburger, I'd be like, Megan, this is a bubble right now. This is tech in 2000. I'm overvalued.
It was absolutely insane. It had white cheddar on it. Oh, it was delicious.
Okay. Let's go into listener corner. Before we do, I want to give a shout out to Athletic Greens. Still, we're riding that train. Drinkag1.com/swap SWAP. Do you take it with you on the trip?
Oh my God. It was like the only thing I could do right for my body on the trip. You know, when your body is in like all sorts of cahoots and you're like, the only thing I can do right now is drink Athletic Greens. It made me so happy.
So I went through all of the things that are research backed on it just to share with a listener. Yeah. Because I try to engage with people that are really skeptical just because I think it's helpful.
And we've been there. We're skeptics, but we're not skeptics of athletic drinks. Yeah.
Everything from beetroot powder to ashwagandha to, you know, different types of cordyceps, that can have been proven to possibly help endurance in very small ways.
And so, possibly transform us into an alien universe.
Oh yeah.
What was that?
It was Last of Us, the show.
Yes.
Cordyceps took over. So drinkag1.com/swap, give it a try. If you're skeptical, you also get free travel packs there, so you can go to trips like Megan did, and free vitamin D. So if you use that website. On to listener corner. Here it is. Gosh, I cannot thank you enough for your constant words of wisdom. I think you both might be the master shifus. I don't know what that
is. I don't know that reference is either.
Of life.
Usually you know all references.
Apparently I'm lacking here. Of life and coaching. Hopefully it's okay. What if it's not a good reference? What if it's like...
They're like, you guys are the shithead.
Oh no, Scarlett Johansson's going to be on I know. SNL parroting us.
Yeah. Actually, how hard would that be?
Yeah.
To be fair, it's like, you know, how do you like go to the grocery store after that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think a certain type of person has to become a politician.
That's true. I could never do that.
Right? Like I think that's the hard part about politics
in general. I have way too much anxiety to do that.
Yeah. And also like you need to have a certain amount of, I mean, I don't want to say... focus on yourself but you have to have something that most people don't, because you're essentially waking up every day.
You have to have a kitchen.
Yeah. Think about how hard we work in athletics. Like,
yeah,
they work so much harder than that, but they're doing it in such a way that they have to like compromise over and over and over. And to reach higher and higher places, it's almost like the argument that there's very rarely like a super ethical billionaire, mm-hmm. not because there aren't super ethical rich people, but because it's hard to become a billionaire with all the compromises you have to make and like maintain your moral compass. Similarly, like it's probably hard to be a senator while maintaining your moral compass, much easier to be like a state representative or something, though, you know, that's probably a mixed bag too. So it's always how I'm curious about politics, and because like I have a tendency to do a little bit of hero worship. So mm-hmm. someone like Barack Obama, like I look up to so much, but like realistically he's a politician. So there probably is stuff there that like if I actually knew him, he'd hate me.
Oh no. You guys would like play basketball together and love it.
Maybe.
He's hilarious.
Maybe, but
choose someone different.
Choose someone different. Okay, I do respect AOC, even though politically she's left of me. Like I think people always ask about our politics. I'm not like, you know, I just don't know. Especially economically, I don't know, you know, but I respect the way that she seems to stand up for her principles and has like worked on compromise and things like that. But again, reaching those political heights, I'm always skeptical. What do you think?
No, I agree. Yeah, I it's a point in which I actually shockingly do agree.
And, you know, same with Republican politicians. Like there are some, you know, they're not very vocal anymore, but you hear them talk and you're like, yeah, that person's eminently reasonable. And yeah, they have a different background than me, but like that person could be president. Like even obviously Nikki Haley said some odious things about stuff, but I'm sometimes like, yeah, Megan's giving me the wrap it up.
I'm giving you the look of like, yeah.
I mean, obviously I wouldn't vote for her, but you know, the point being like, on to the
David's like, I got another look. It's a good thing we're an hour 30 in.
I've been noticing how much you've been emphasizing fueling and nutrition. It's so hard in our sport and society to not get wrapped up in body image. I wouldn't consider myself a natural runner at all and grew up doing gymnastics with a heavy strength focus. It drives me nuts to hear people say, oh, you look like a runner, when there really isn't any image of what a runner is. I mean, did the velociraptor identify as a runner? What a good comment.
What a good comment.
Did the velociraptor identify as a runner?
Be the velociraptor.
Yeah.
Yeah. How cool is it to get to be a velociraptor?
Yeah. And I mean, that's the point. We are animals, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's a helpful DMT reflection. It's like, we are one with the universe. We are things, we are these organic compounds moving through the world. Whatever we've determined a look is of a runner is just random associations. Like, embrace your organic compounds going out there and crushing shit.
Also, this organic compound has done a lot of jumping.
Yeah.
And one thing that I thought was really interesting from the Further Project is Kayla used to be a volleyball player, doing a ton of jumps. And she shared on her Instagram that her bone density was so good. In sports like gymnastics, volleyball, you might be doing your bones a nice service by jumping repeatedly, doing strength training so that you can be that badass, strong, consistent runner later on in life. And that's so cool.
Embrace your strength, embrace the fueling,
embrace the jumping,
the room service cheeseburgers sometimes
with the cheddar.
We might need to take out a loan.
I know.
Hopefully the speed sponsorship comes through, because otherwise that cheeseburger might have done us dirty.
I know. I haven't done my taxes yet. I'm very late.
Oh, yes.
And I feel like there's always like a pre and post taxes doing where I go through all my expenses and I'm like, I should probably stop ordering room service cheeseburgers.
But every year I just order more shoes.
Yeah. Your shoes, I'm cheeseburgers. And we align. That is love.
That is love. Perfect partnership.
I know. Peanut butter and jelly. Shoes and cheeseburgers. Yeah.
So if you're out there, go click follow on our podcast wherever you listen. Give it 5 stars. Say that you like it. It helps other people find it. And we deeply love you all. Thank you for being on this journey with us.
We love you all so much. And I love you.
You're okay.
Am I better than orange slices?
Megan, you shouldn't compare to that organic compound of such sweetness and beauty. So no, I love you very much, and go be a velociraptor.
Woo!
Huzzah!